give a big welcome to David Robics from Portland and Kamala Emanuel from here from the Engine.
Thank you. Lachlan Macquarie was a Scotsman who signed up to serve the British crown. He traveled round the world to America. Not long after that, he headed down to his post in New South Wales to be the governor, to expand colonial rule. Half of Sydney was named after him. Everybody learns his name in school. Just don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you. Lachlan Macquarie was a governor who opened schools and hospitals. His aim was to civilize a nation in the interests of himself and capital. He was a raging alcoholic and a bad businessman, but you could say he did his best to broaden the global dominion of a project they call the Christian West. Just don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you. Lachlan Macquarie stole children from their parents and never gave them back. And when Gundagara and Darawal people resisted, he ordered his soldiers to attack. He said, make the Aborigines your prisoners. Shoot them and hang them from the trees. So as to strike fear in the surviving natives in order to bring them to their knees. Just don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you. Don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you.
Stephen Langford in Sydney is, last I checked, still banned from entering the Central Business District for putting Macquarie's quote on his statue in Sydney. It's one of the more entertaining legal cases of recent years. This is a song for the failed states of America.
When you're working two jobs and living in a tent, when a house costs $1 million and you can't pay the rent, when politicians say they'll help but it keeps getting worse each time the landlord lobby pulls the strings of the purse, when the human right to housing isn't even part of the debate, you know you're living in a failed state. When millions of citizens are spending half their lives locked up in a prison for trying to survive, when laws must be broken just to have a place to stay, when the prisons pay the senators to look the other way, if you have to be a criminal to put food upon your plate, you know you're living in a failed state. When you're facing climate breakdown, when the trees are all on fire, when half the country's underwater, when a climate change denier runs the nation, and the opposition party votes for oil rigs and pipelines, it's not so much a country as it is a corporation. Buckling under its weight, you know you're living in a failed state. When your nation is an empire facing daily blowback, and the only thing your leaders can think to do is attack, bipartisan consensus that we need to spend $700 billion before the year's end on a military budget to make America great. You know, you're living in a failed state. When almost every day some psycho with a gun has to open fire on a crowd before it's done. When a music festival becomes a free fire zone, and all they can say is it's okay now, he was acting alone. Buy some armor, pray to God, and hide behind a gate. You know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state.
So hopefully your trains in Australia are running better than the ones in the U.S., but they're derailing constantly in the U.S. You got that happening? Derailing cars full of fossil fuels and other toxins going through towns.
Almost 10 years ago, the train came through in the center of Lac-Mégantic, ticket blue. Scores of people died that night. What's been done since then to make things right? They'd like to know. In East Palestine, trains derailed in Washington State. They talked about reform too little too late. The industry lobbied both sides of the aisle. Legalized bribery American style. Ask the folks in East Palestine. Reforms discussed but never made. Ancient tracks worn and frayed. As expected, the brakes failed. Dozens of rail cars derailed in the town of East Palestine. Carcinogenic chemicals leaked, killed thousands of fish into creeks. Poisoned air made people sick. You can hear the time bomb tick in the town of East Palestine. Acrid air across the county. Who knows whether to stay or flee? The EPA says it's all clean. It says so on this machine in the town of East Palestine. The next disaster's coming soon, as surely as the rising moon. The air, the water, and lives at stake. But we can't make them get new brakes. Just ask the folks in East Palestine. Just ask the folks in East Palestine.
But let's do this first, because we need some comic relief here. This is a song for a country that knows what to do with its bankers. The banks are failing again in the U.S. and notably in Switzerland as well. It's always notable when banks fail in Switzerland. But who knows what's next? They never tell us. They always tell us everything's fine. This is a sing-along. They're all sing-alongs. Some of them have easier choruses to learn than others.
Iceland is an island with 500,000 or so Vikings, mostly known for volcanoes, hot springs, and fishing. Known for its welfare state, for being good and socialistic. Certainly not known for being corrupt or nepotistic, but in the USA and Europe, when they were deregulating banks, Iceland's politicians took bribes and joined their ranks. Soon you had a situation one would think just couldn't be, a bank whose debt was worth 10 times the country's GDP. When Wall Street imploded, sure enough it spread. Banks all over the world were floating in the red. All over the world, governments made the plan to cut spending and raise taxes on the working woman and working man. The banks were bailed out while the people had to pay. But in Iceland, people thought there must be a better way. And the earth stood still a moment. Fear was struck in every toff when Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. Folks were in the streets in Reykjavik and just couldn't be ignored. They said, this is a debt we Icelanders can't afford. Let's guarantee deposits of all our people, yes indeed. But as for all the speculators motivated by their greed to make really dumb investments, to them Iceland said, good luck. Sorry for your losses, but we don't really give a fuck. The 1% all trembled when they took away the trough. When Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. Gordon Brown called them terrorists, said we cannot let this stand. Who do these peacenik blondes think they are in Iceland? He threatened isolation and economy in flames. But the Icelanders said, sorry, but the banks can settle their own claims, though that might be harder for them now that they're under house arrest. Or else they fled the country as they were most unwelcome guests. And now Reykjavik's recovery just makes the fat cat scoff. Since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. If you haven't heard of this example, perhaps there's a reason why the owners of the world don't want this kind of shit to fly. They say we all must pay up in this shakedown by the mob if we can't afford to pay the rent because we don't have a job. They say it's not their problem if we're forever shackled by their debt. We must save the 1% from the fate they should have met. But there is an alternative, though it makes the fat cats cough, since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. Since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off.
So the first big leak that WikiLeaks facilitated the exposure of was about the corruption within the Icelandic banking sector. And that was around 2007, 2008. And then in 2010, the big leak that put WikiLeaks on the global map for the first time in a huge way was the leak that Chelsea Manning was ultimately found to be responsible for smuggling out of Iraq, which was the war logs that exposed all kinds of war crimes committed by U.S. forces in Iraq. And Brian Law here in Queensland was one individual who saw the video of the helicopter massacre in Baghdad and made a decision to engage in a global tradition that has been has happened in many different countries, and we'll sing about other incidents this evening as well, of taking sledgehammers and other weapons to military bases and swinging them at unsuspecting warplanes and helicopters as they're sitting on the ground. And when they're on the ground, interestingly, the nose cones and other items that are easily accessible by a sledgehammer are extremely expensive and very fragile. Not like when they're in the air firing at you. So, and you know, there's only 26,000 combat aircraft functioning in the world at any given time, apparently, according to Wikipedia, which of course is not entirely reliable. But say it's like twice that, you know, like we just need 52,000 well-placed people trespassing on military bases around the world at the right time. You know, that's seems doable. It's a lot of plane tickets, probably, or a lot of boat rides or something. Watched it on the TV. Machine guns fire towards the ground. I watched the people run. Helicopter gunship strafing the street. I watched them lining up the bodies in the Baghdad heat. They say these leaks had consequences, and I must agree. When I saw them fire on the children, it affected me. I thought, what if I were wearing the other shoe? If I had a hammer, what would I do? I am just a person, like anyone. I am just another mother's son. I have no special powers. I cannot fly. Not like that helicopter gunship up in the sky, sending all those bullets all around to the journalists and children on the ground. I am just one man. That's very true. But if I had a hammer, what would I do? Sometimes I try to wonder, why should I care? But then the answer seems so obvious. There are people down there. And right here in Queensland, there's an army base. And there's a helicopter gunship just sitting in place. There's a time for watching.
There's a time
to act.
There's a time.
It's just gonna kill more children if it remains intact. I am just one person.
I am just
But you
one.
Are two.
You are two.
If you had a hammer,
if you had
what
a hammer,
would you do?
What would you do?
If you had a hammer,
if you had
what
a hammer,
would you do?
What would you do?
This next song I wrote before Twitter ever existed, which seems like an eternity ago. Hard to even remember that political sectarianism and know-it-all obnoxious people existed before, even before the internet existed. But I wrote the song post-internet, pre-social media. I don't drive a car because they run on gas, but if I did, it'd run on biomass.
I ride a bike,
or sometimes a skateboard. So fuck off all you drivers and your yuppie hordes, sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat. I
just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. Look at you people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the bourgeois things you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather, and I like my clothes in black, and I made a really cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think that is so cool. It's so much funner doing this than being stuck in school. I can't believe you're wearing those brand new shiny shoes. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't have sex. And there will be no sequel because heterosexual relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to anti-flag and crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed breeders, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in leaders, I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy. Whether or not it works, I know it is the case that only direct action can save the human race. So when I see you in your voting booth, then I know it's true. I'm a better anarchist than you. I am not a pacifist, I like throwing bricks, and when the cops have caught me and I've taken a few licks, I always feel lucky if I get a bloody nose, because I feel so militant and everybody knows. By the time the riot is all through, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm a better anarchist than you.
So the most uplifting and exciting thing that I have personally encountered, despite the commentary about direct action and all that I've just made, I'll contradict myself immediately, the most exciting thing I came across over the past couple of years has been in England, where there are folks organized under the banner of Palestine Action who have been for almost 3 years now, since July 2020, trespassing on factory floors of a company called Elbit Systems, which has a couple of plants here in Australia as well, but which had 8 plants in between England and Scotland, now only 6, because 2 of them have permanently closed because folks keep trespassing on the factory floors with sledgehammers and destroying everything in sight. Yeah. And then, unlike here in Australia, in Britain, and unlike in the United States, in Britain, when people do this sort of thing, when they are taken to trial under the Crown, which has tried a number of times over the past 2.5 years to imprison, you know, to convict people of the apparent crimes they're committing, but under the proportionality defense in Britain, they keep on getting off because. Because British companies aiding and abetting Israeli war crimes is actually illegal under British law, oddly enough, and so when the activists press that issue, then they keep on getting found not guilty because compared to the war crimes, smashing the equipment is basically irrelevant proportionately. And I wrote them a little theme song.
Protests were going on. They were going on for years. And then Palestine Action started smashing up the gears. And that's when the people got up off of their seats, took their families into town and blockaded the streets. For 3 days and nights you could hear the hammer swing, though no one knew for sure what the future might bring. They knew one thing for certain, these weapons of war must not be sent to the ports they're heading for. So this is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. After smashing up equipment and smashing a whole bunch, a lot of folks began developing a hunch. The cops took 3 full days to send anyone inside, and after 15 hours they let the charges slide. It seems the prosecutors understood the climb. British companies aiding and abetting war crimes. The factory in Oldham had to close its gate. And the muralists in Palestine said that's smashing great. So this is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. All around the country, hammers being swung, showing civil disobedience is stronger than the tongue. Taking action here so the weapons go nowhere, so they don't get sent to the IOF, cause we know what they'll do there. And so does the Prime Minister and the men who he supports, selling weapons to war criminals who don't want to go to court, who don't want to face the facts of what they've done, where the bullets go when they're fired from the guns. So this is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. This is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. When the sledgehammers of justice come to town. Unadicum, 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 unadicum.
If you travel around England, I've discovered, you'll find that there are some community centers named after some very notable people in out-of-the-way neighborhoods. Heard about one, wrote a song. Born in Punjab in 1899, from the bottom of the ladder, end of the line. His mother died when he was three. Soon after came his dad. After that, he lost the only brother that he had. When the World War came, he signed up, traveled far. When it was over, he came home to Amritsar. He was serving water to all the people gathered in the garden for the festival. When the soldiers opened fire between four walls filled with thousands of families, 1,000 people killed, he began to organize with others of like mind. Then he knew he had to leave his home behind. Ram Mohammad Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. He was called many names, but the one his comrades knew was written on his arm in the form of a tattoo. He spent years in prison, arrested by the crown. The leader of his party by the British was gunned down. From India to Africa, he ventured forth. Finally, he made it to the north. Ram Mohammad Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. All the lords of India at Westminster had assembled, including the butcher of Punjab, the governor general. Security was tight, but he managed to hide a revolver in his bag. As he got inside, he pointed his pistol and he aimed it well. As he walked up to the lectern, the governor fell. Ram Mohammad Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Ram Mohammad Singh Azad didn't try to run. He awaited his arrest and was taken off to prison.
In the year of 1940, the 31st of July, they put a noose around his neck, and in Pentonville he died. Hindus, Sikhs, and Muslims, and others gathered round in Punjab, where they laid his ashes in the ground. Ram Mohammad Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Ram Mohammad Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Born in Punjab in 1899.
The last time I was in Australia, actually in this very room, it was just a few days before St. Patrick's Day, and I might have had a gig coming up in St. Patrick's Day somewhere, but we had to cancel that back in 2020.
My name is John Riley, I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland, it was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go. Enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. So in the midst of these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied, so we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Gobra. Bright with the harp and the shamrock, and the Libertad para la República. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Fought them in 5 major battles. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside in the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied, so we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied, so we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side.
Came back from Australia in March 2020, and It was a really quiet first couple of months of lockdown as we watched the death toll mount. And then all of a sudden, the streets were filled with tear gas for the next year and a half. Jacob Blake was walking to his SUV, Alton Sterling was selling DVDs. Eric Garner had just broken up a fight. Breonna Taylor was asleep in the middle of the night. Tamir Rice
was...
Tamir Rice was playing in the park. Elijah McClain was out walking after dark. Dominique Clayton was sleeping in her bed when she was shot by a cop in the back of her head. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Walter Scott was driving to a store. Betty Jones was answering her door. Philando Castile was driving home with his girlfriend. Anthony Hill was naked on the grass when he met his end. Edsel Ford was walking in his neighborhood. Michael Brown was blown away just standing where he stood. Kendra James was shot to death at a traffic stop by yet another unaccountable killer cop. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Tatiana Jefferson was playing a video game with her little nephew, gunned down just the same. Oscar Grant was celebrating the new year, handcuffed when the shots rang out that everyone could hear. Eric Reason pulled into a parking spot. Not long after that was when he was shot. George Floyd was just shopping in a store. Micah Xavier Johnson thought he was still at war. Say their names. 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 So we've got climate chaos and World War III and all kinds of other things going on about to happen or happening, but the U.S. Congress is very busily obsessed with an app. And I wrote a song about that. And my daughter's favorite app. And your daughter's favorite app. If you got one of those teenagers. Debate rages from Brussels to D.C. Which app do the kids like best? Is it promoting democratic values that we all uphold and cherish in the West? Like freedom, democracy, selling advertisements, getting dictators elected. Like with Cambridge Analytica 2016 and how Duterte and Trump were selected. But scandal after scandal doesn't matter. There's no limit to all we can afford. For any company stacked with former cabinet members from the White House on their corporate board. Appeasing all the wishes of the Pentagon. Conducting business there on California soil. They may just be in it for the profit. But to God and country they are loyal. Because Facebook's not a Chinese corporation. There's no need to ban or block. It's run by patriotic American billionaires. Unlike TikTok. Look at a video on YouTube.
within a few recommendations. You'll be seeing lies on the subject of your choice, viewing disinformation. Whatever keeps us all glued to the screen, it's well understood. Whatever lines the pockets of the billionaires, it must be well and good, because YouTube's not a Chinese corporation. There's no need to ban or block. It's run by patriotic American billionaires, unlike TikTok. Scroll through your feed on Instagram, as their own studies attest. The more time you spend on the platform, the more lonely and depressed. But as long as they can use your emotions to encourage you to spend and buy, it must be okay. It's the American way. Be a patriot and don't ask why. Because Instagram's not a Chinese corporation. There's no need to ban or block. It's run by patriotic American billionaires, unlike TikTok. As the billionaires make more billions and the tent cities grow and grow, as we look at our phones and see what the billionaires want us to do and know, as we hand off our communications to our master Silicon, as long as it's red, white, and blue, then we know which side it's on. Because it's not a Chinese corporation, there's no need to ban or block. It's run by patriotic American billionaires, unlike TikTok. Unlike TikTok. Unlike TikTok.
So we've just come back from Ballarat. And we spent some time at the Trades Hall, and we spent some time at the museum for the Eureka Stockade, and a place where a lot of very important Australian history of democracy took place. That was my go at introducing a song. I don't know how.
And it's a great museum too, the Eureka Museum or whatever. What's it called? History of Democracy Museum.
It used to be called.
Used to be, and now it has a different name that we
can't remember.
That Instagram hasn't learned yet. At least that's my excuse. I can't remember if Wikipedia existed yet when I first came to Australia, but there was a lot of things I hadn't ever bothered to look up, like, you know, figure out. Like, there were things I had heard about, and I wondered, okay, I don't know what they're talking about, and I should find out at some point. Like, every time some music group would mention the term Southern Cross, I always thought, like, oh, is this about the civil rights movement? Are we burning things on people's front lawns in Alabama? But no, this is a constellation in the Southern Hemisphere, which I had never been to. And no, that's not true. I'd been to Buenos Aires, but you can't see the stars, so I don't know. If I
doesn't count if you can't see.
What's that?
I said it doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
Every corner of the world. They came from all around when in 1851 they struck gold upon the ground. Every voyage was a long one, months upon the stormy sea. Some to seek their fortune, others escaping slavery. What they found on the gold fields was ruled by brutish thugs, discrimination and taxation mixed with swinging billy clubs. The gold was getting scarcer and cops were getting worse. The diggers burned their licenses and vowed to end this curse. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. town tried to divide them, giving preference to some. The diggers wouldn't have it. They said it's all of us or none. They built a stockade while the redcoats massed nearby, and they heard the miners shouting, "We're ready now to die." The rebel miners waited for whatever lay in store, and on one December morning in 1854, the redcoats attacked the camp. Dozens there would fall among these brave gold diggers who'd risen to the call. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the Southern sun. The army thought that it was over and things would go their way, but when 15,000 miners rallied a month later on the day, the crown conceded everything, all of their demands. They'd won an end to license fees, the right to vote and land. So here's to Joe and Charlie, Lawler and the rest. They drew the battle lines and put crown rule to the test. The diggers may have lost the battle, but they quickly won the day, and those shots fired in Victoria were heard 10,000 miles away. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the Southern sun. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the Southern sun. Country was invaded and destroyed. Then they had a baby boy. They sold everything they owned so they might escape the war zone. They took the Baltic route north and west. It was the one the smuggler said was best. They got as far as Germany, which is where they had another baby. It's a deadly thing, what some call immigration. England was their final destination. In a crowded van, driving to the port, on past Flanders fields, yet another life cut short. Cops on every side, the vehicle surrounded. When the loud crack sounded, Mama held her daughter tight in place. Then she saw the bullet hit her face. And Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name.
Say her name.
There are many ways to stop a van. Many ways to do it. They can make a roadblock. For one, if you're under fire, you can use your gun. But all the bullets flew in one direction. At first they denied it, but at closer inspection, the cop was aiming for the driver's head. But he missed and hit the girl instead. And Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name.
Say
if the driver
name.
Had been hit, how many more? numbers would be added to the score of those who only wanted to raise a family but then died on the shores of Turkey or somewhere in the desert or tortured in a prison or on the bottom of the ocean at a Baghdad checkpoint or at a traffic stop or shot down by a Belgian cop. And Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name.
We got a couple more for you. This is one of the most famous and quite possibly the most impactful person ever to come out of Australia. Has been in prison for the past 12 years in London. And his wife, Stella, she is raising their two kids by herself and with, you know, help from relatives. And when she takes them to the playground, she'll get the typical question that you get from other parents that you meet at playgrounds while your children are playing, one of which is, how did you meet your husband? And that's an exceedingly complicated question. So I wrote a little song that describes the basic circumstances.
When Julian met Stella in the embassy, in the only room for 7 years that he would ever see, guarded by police with cops on every street, an unusual situation for the first time you should meet. When Julian met Stella, the time they spent was increasingly within the walls of a little tent, where they could have some privacy from the ever-present gaze under which he was spending all his nights and days. When Julian met Stella, there was the chance of grace. Perhaps the president would decide to drop the case. They had two children beneath the watchful eyes of the Americans and British and all kinds of other spies. When Julian met Stella on Embassy Row, it was before he was abducted and forced to go to Belmarsh Prison without a chance to speak, awaiting the extradition that the USA seeks. When Julian met Stella, the folks at the UN and people all around the world spoke out then. This journalist belongs among the free, not in prison for exposing crimes against humanity. When Julian met Stella.
We'll do one more. Thanks so much for coming. Thanks so much to Alex for putting this gig together. Thanks so much to Kamala for playing music around the country with me. And thanks so much to Andy Payne for that fantastic opening set. And if you want to hear more music from me and various other musicians, as well as stories from folks who were at the action when prisoners broke out of Woomera, which is something of great interest to me, which I plan to write a song about after I hear some stories tomorrow, come to the park, to Paradise Park. There's flyers on that red tablecloth right there. And this is a song I wrote amid the clouds of tear gas. I was actually not getting tear gas. I was just going out and then coming home and putting the kids to bed and then hearing about all the tear gas afterwards. And the tear gas, they never started tear gassing everybody until 10:30. It was always like 10:30 when things kicked out. I don't know what the deal was with 10:30, but I was usually in bed by then. Then I'd go around and check out the aftermath the next morning. And put up lots of stickers around before that, because you know, they would announce in advance which police station they were going to try to burn down that night. So I'd like go around putting up stickers on the park, educational materials, and trying to recruit people to various activities, and then I'd leave. So it's a cowardly form of activism, really. It's but you know, that's how I've gotten to live this far, just without any concussions. Never been clubbed on the head by a cop so far. I'm not proud of that, but I have a lot of friends who die young because they get clubbed on the head so much from cops, and that's I want to avoid that, but oh well. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, this is a song about hope. I co-wrote it with Arundhati Roy. She doesn't know about that. But
like an old cloth torn and fraying, it came like a clarion call to illustrate the saying, united we stand, divided we fall. A thin veneer torn by disease shredded the great con laid bare, come from across the seas, now floating in the air like a corpse that's lying exposed, that all of us now can see, all that the cadaver shows about a society. The veil of fantasy lifted, that gives us at least some idea how another world is possible. I can hear her breathing now. Like the red blood that flows from the bullet, whether coated in rubber or not. Like the faces you see in the helmet, reflecting the thickening plot. Driven by such a villain, as a thing exponential allows, it says another world is possible. And I can hear her breathing now.
Another world is possible. I can hear her breathing.
Like the pallor
now
on so many faces, on every end of the town, on the murals in so many places, boarded up and long ago shut down, making all the connections between the mule and the plow, that another world is possible. And I can hear her breathing now.
Another world is possible. I can hear her breathing.
Like the smoke
now
rising up coast to coast, with formations that brighten the skies, like Lord Thomas Jefferson's ghost, his victims no longer disguised, as his visage falls into the river, like the skull of an old sacred cow that says another world is possible. And I can hear her breathing now.
Another world is possible.
Another world is possible. And I can hear her breathing now.
Another world is possible. I can hear her breathing now.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to ask him to do one more?
When the world has gone crazy and it's all becoming clear, when they're gunning down our comrades and it seems the end is near, as they're loading up the launchers for the tear gas grenades, we can take off our bandanas and kiss behind the barricades. When it's madness all around and you can see this at a glance, we will sing and we will cry, we will laugh and we will dance, as they shout their marching orders beneath the helicopter blades. We shall seize the moment for a kiss behind the barricades. They will try to break our spirit, and at times they may succeed, but our love for the world is stronger than their greed. When the building is surrounded and hope begins to fade, in my final hour, a kiss behind the barricades. As the movement grows, there will be hills and bends, but at the center of the struggle are your lovers and your friends. And the more we hold each other up, the less we can be swayed. Here's to love and solidarity and a kiss behind the barricades.
Well, once again, please put your hands today for David Rogers.